This episode of Table Talk is sponsored by Berry Brothers and Rudd, Britain's oldest wine and spirit merchant. It isn't possible at the moment to go to your favourite restaurant because restaurants are closed. But Berry Brothers and Rudd have nobly stepped into the breach with their fantastic new at-home service. Berry's will send a magnificent three-course meal directly to your house, and they'll also provide the ideal wine or wines to go with the food. What a delicious idea. Go to spectator.co.uk/Berry Brothers to find out more.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Bip Ling. Bip is a model, musician, food writer, visual artist and DJ. Her new Christmas album for children, Mooch and the Moochies, by her creation Queen of Mooch, is out now and available to stream on iTunes, Apple Music and Spotify. Bip, welcome to Table Talk.
Hiya.
Hi, so let's start where we always do, at the very beginning. Bip, tell us about your earliest memories of food.
I remember eating a lot of baked beans for some reason, and I remember being obsessed with pink food. And when I was very little, I was very obsessed with eating salami, grapefruit, hot dogs, anything that was pink.
Salami and grapefruit are quite grown-up flavours for a child.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously my kind of relationship with colour was quite in my mind when I was a kid, as well as taste.
Clearly very pronounced even at that age. And your mother, Tanya, she's an artist and has lived all over the world. Has that had an influence on your style of cooking and eating?
Absolutely. My mum has a fantastic way of kind of freestyling in the kitchen. So the way she makes her artwork is very much the same. You know, she'll just kind of chuck together anything that's in the fridge and make something that tastes incredible. And she never weighs anything. You know, she's always kind of making the ingredients, chucking things in, really, just filling what she thinks is, you know, the right amount of, you know, butter or whatever it might be. And it always comes out amazing and tastes really, really good.
And what sorts of dishes would she traditionally cook when you were younger?
One of my favourites was her lasagna with sausage, Cumberland sausage inside, and layered with spinach and lots of tomato and lots of cheese, ricotta cheese, of course, and on the top it would have a mascarpone cheese, which would just taste so yummy. It's like my favourite meal. Every time it's my birthday, she makes it for me every year.
And were mealtimes important to your family when you were younger?
Absolutely, definitely. After school, you know, my parents would like us to sit around the table and eat all together. That was very important. That was like the kind of the time of the day when we all kind of get together and be together, and, you know, my parents would make a big deal of it.
And your mother, Tanya, was born in Calcutta, and I think I'm right in thinking your grandparents are Indian. Was that an influence on the food that you were eating as well?
Yeah, my mum makes amazing curries, but also my grandparents, Dadu and Didas. Didas is Bengali for grandmother and Dadu is Bengali for grandfather, would cook curries and samosas, like handmade samosas and the whole entire works, the vegetables, the dal. I've learned most of my cooking from my grandmother Didas, or my Indian side, my Indian cuisine from Didas.
And are they based here now, or have you been out to India quite a few times to see them?
They're based here now. I've been back and forth to India quite a few times. I was doing some charity work in a village outside of Calcutta called Piali for a little bit. Yeah, I miss it so much. I'm planning to go back soon.
And what was the food like when you were in India? Was it sort of comforting because you knew it, or were there lots of new things that you discovered?
The street samosas or something else in India. So every time I'd go and I'd land, the first thing I would ask my grandparents would be to stop by a street food Indian samosa place. They would always be vegetarian, so it would just be the potato with the onion seeds, and they're just mouth-watering. Like, I'd literally get about 10 of them, and just absolutely, like, talking about them now is making me feel like going, I can taste them in my mouth. I mean, I've never tried an Indian samosa like the ones, the street food ones in India, in Calcutta. But yeah, generally, like, my gram did us would have cooks there, so she would teach them how to cook exactly her dish. So her meals that she'd make, you know, back here are exactly the same. Prawn curries, the lamb curries, chicken curries, everything is, you know, identical. So, yeah, I mean, when I go to hers here in the UK, I do feel very much like I'm back in India every time.
And travel must have been a big part of your adult life. Was it an important part of your childhood?
Not so much of my childhood. I mean, I didn't go to India until I think I was about 12 or 11 for the first time. But yeah, obviously we just had kind of holidays to France and just kind of like Cornwall and Devon, places like that, for family holidays.
Lovely. I've been told, well, in our notes, that you were very obsessed with a tomato dress when you were younger. Can you tell us what that was?
That's so funny. I've no idea where you've got that from. That's amazing. Yeah, I was obsessed with a tomato dress when I was a kid.
Is it a dress shaped like a tomato? What is a tomato dress?
As I can remember, I can't remember. I think I might have been about 3 years old. It was just kind of like a very plain dress, like sleeveless with a zip of tomatoes on. And yeah, I remember being like, it was the only dress I wanted to wear, and if I wasn't wearing it, I'd be watching it in the washing machine and hope watching it dry until it was ready for me to wear again.
And what about school? What was food like at school? Were there school dinners? Did you take in packed lunches? How did it look for you?
I had it all, really. So, you know, I had this packed lunches episode. I think, if I can remember correctly, during the winter times, I was having school dinners, and then the summer I'd have a packed lunch. When I was in high school, I was fortunate to be just next to Stratton Ground in Westminster. So, you know, we were allowed out for lunchtime, and that was great because we had pizzas, paninis, you know, out there was like fresh fruit. It was really quite exciting. And also the school dinners, I remember the sausage rolls actually at Greycoats. Yeah, the sausage rolls are amazing, and the flapjacks.
Obviously your tomato dress then led on to great things, because you then went to Central St Martin's, where you studied fine art. What was food like when you were at university? Were you living at home at that point, or did you move out?
Yeah, I was still at my parents, so they lived in Wimbledon, in London. So yeah, I commuted to Farringdon, and that was good fun. We went to just off Back Hill again. There are so many places to eat out, like so spoiled. And it was good fun because I obviously had new friends from, like, you know, around, you know, different places. I had a friend in Kuwait, from Kuwait, and a friend from Italy. And, you know, we would kind of take our time at lunchtime and indulge. I remember we used to go to the pub and eat lots of tacos and sometimes drink the beer at lunchtime. It was a bit naughty, but good fun. I can remember just being obsessed with this tuna sandwich. Tuna and cheese, panini. With my friend, yeah.
And were you cooking for yourself at all at that stage? You've contributed several recipes now to The Spectator, but as a sort of young Central St Martin student, were you going home and knocking things up in your kitchen or relying on takeaways?
I had my mother cooking for me, my mum.
Ah,
so,
of course.
You know, I was still going back home. So I was very lucky in that respect to kind of have home cooking still. Yeah, I went into professional work quite soon after that year because I only did a foundation art diploma.
Right.
And then, you know, I was still living at my parents'. As soon as I did get my own property, I just dived into cooking a lot more. So obviously I live and work on my own, and I'm in my studio every day making artwork. And I cook every single day. There's not a day when I'm not cooking something or making like super smoothie, or, you know, I do like to have days of fasting, and then, you know, I love to indulge, obviously.
And just to take you back slightly, in 2011, I think, is when you were first signed as a model. What's food like? I mean, obviously, there's all kinds of stories you hear about models, but what is the reality of what models are eating when they're on set or working on a shoot?
You know, I was with Special Booking, so there wasn't so much pressure on me to, you know, be a certain size. However, you know, for my own self-confidence, you know, to kind of be on shoot and, you know, to go to and be photographed and stuff, you know, obviously, like, I would like to kind of, like, look my best and feel my best. So, you know, I just felt more comfortable in my own skin in front of the camera. And that was a personal choice for me. But obviously, I did hear loads of stories about... Because, you know, as well, my mum was doing a show, and, you know, I met a lot of models backstage, you know, so... Obviously, they're all wanting to, like, do exactly the same thing, you know, look after, like, feel as confident as I did. But yeah, it was quite fun. I saw them like eating like the food out of the sandwich and then just like chucking the bread. It's quite funny.
Tell us about your creation, the Mooch. Is it the Mooch or Queen Mooch? Because that's obviously your... There's a picture of it behind you at the moment as we're recording. Where did that come from? And I mean, she looks very colourful. Is it a sort of reference to your early interest in colour?
Yeah, so yeah, Mooch is a boy. There's some Mooch girls and some Mooch boys. You know, he likes to eat Mooch and... He's kind of like an imaginary friend at the beginning, which I developed and I kind of became quite passionate about, and I still am very passionate about my Mooch. He's got good taste, so, you know, he likes to eat a lot, and food is very important to me and my work process and my art process. Like, I'm very much into that relationship of the emotion and the feeling and the senses that, you know, flavour, spices, herbs can give to you, as well as, you know, looking at a painting and hearing a sound, hearing music, how it can kind of move you into, you know, a moment of reflection, or, you know, feeling comforted, feeling like I'm back in India, you know, like smells do the same thing. And for me, it's all related. So yeah, the Mooch and me, food and music, it's all combined.
Several of your songs are directly about food. It sounds silly to say, where do your ideas come from? But you do. There is like a real focus on food in several of your songs. What took you in that direction?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing about that flavour. And I mean, me personally, you know, like when I eat my favourite burger, I love blue cheese in my burger. And, you know, I'm very particular about how the layer of, you know, the meat and, you know, the lettuce and the tomato and... the mayonnaise, and then I like the cheese, like, straight onto the burger. How that combination, you know, like, makes me feel. And it's like a song. So, yeah, it was just very natural. I mean, I've got a whole catalogue, like, a whole bunch of new songs that are all very much food-related. And it only feels like it's the right thing to do, really. It's quite hard to explain.
Because Bit Burger, I think I'm right in saying, sort of part of it is about you imagining owning a burger shop. Is that something that you'd love to do one day, or is it all kind of quite imaginary?
Yeah, I'd love to have my own burger shop, definitely.
There's also a song called Curry. Can you tell us a bit about the inspiration for that one? Presumably it was your family background.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I remember I was out with my friends one night, and I just remember, like, thinking of song titles. Like, we had some drinks, and, you know, when you're with your friends, you kind of get a bit excitable about things, and sometimes that's usually when I get really super creative. A lot of ideas come to mind when you kind of, when I'm out and about with my mates. And I remember just having this idea, Curry. And I told my grandfather, my daddy, and he was like, "Be Pasha, that's the best idea I've ever had." I've ever heard. And he was like, "Everybody loves curry." And I was like, "Yeah, me too." And then, yeah, I actually wrote it with my grandparents, Daddy and Didos. We were sat, and my sister was in the room as well. We were just like, bit proper dom, like head bopping to the song. It was so funny. It was so fun.
Sounds great. It was very catchy. People should listen to it.
Thank you.
In normal times, do you enjoy cooking for friends?
Yes, I love cooking for friends. I love the dal recipe that I wrote for The Spectator. It's one of my friends' favourite dishes. They all love it. And thankfully, I've learned how to cook it absolutely perfectly. And I'm very fortunate to have, like, the queen dal cook, which my Didos. I mean, nobody compares to her recipe, which she's taught me. It's just magical how she does it. It tastes unbelievable, like, absolutely mouth-watering. So, yeah, but when friends come over, it's just... dull it is, you know, it's always dull. It's, and I've got so good at cooking it, and it just feels so easy and natural, and everybody absolutely loves it. Unfortunately, I've actually become allergic to the red split lentils, so I now cook with the mung dal lentils, which don't quite have the flavour as red split lentils, but hopefully one day I'll get better and I can chug down the red split lentils.
And talking of your friends, am I right in thinking one of your friends put together a juice, like a list of juices for you? How, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, Emma. That was a while ago. That was like, I was kind of investigating on, you know, how juices can keep you alive and are full of nutrients. I think I was doing a bit of a kind of keep fit regime at the time. But yeah, my favourite is carrot juice with a little bit of ginger and some apple. I'm kind of more into smoothies now. I'm more into blueberries, almond milk, cacao, maca, and a bit of chia seeds on the top.
Obviously, you've mentioned that you've been writing for The Spectator, and I think I'm right in saying you're putting together a cookbook at the moment. And we know you've got your grandmother's dal recipe, but how do you go about finding new recipes?
I quite enjoy making mistakes because usually that's when I find a new recipe and I kind of like, oh, wow, I've never tried that before. Or, for example, the other day I was cooking macaroni and cheese and I didn't have normal full-fat milk in the fridge, but I did have almond milk. And I usually prefer to make it with full-fat milk because you've got to have the cheese. It's got to be the best mac and cheese ever. So I just tried it with almond milk. And then it actually, for some reason, I don't know why, but it felt a lot more moist and I kind of quite prefer it when it's moist. So, yeah, it was a good discovery.
Have you had any real disasters while cooking?
Yes, of course. I used to be really good at baking when I was really little. I used to bake mooches and loads of different, like, animals. And, like, my mum and dad every morning would be like, wow, there's all this new bread in the morning. I was fixated with baking bread. And now I just, for some reason, baking, it does not work with me. That's the only thing. But, I mean, I've tried to do it. But every time I try to bake, like, cookies or, like, anything, it just never, ever works. So I need to put some time into that one.
Do you have a sweet tooth? One of the recipes that you wrote for The Spectator was for coconut ice. Do you like coconut ice?
Yes, I do. I make a fudge recipe as well. I like it every now and then, actually. I don't have so much of a sweet tooth, but I do have time for the sweets when it's the right time. However, it does, like, too much sugar, like, I do definitely get a crash. And so I try to, like, not eat sugar unless it's, like, you know, I can't help it because it is really nice. My mum said that when I was little, I would always eat everything, so she would just only feed me veg. And then when it was my birthday, she made me a cake, and I ate too much icing. I ate it all the blue icing, and I was sick everywhere, and she didn't let me... She didn't let me eat anymore, and I was crying all day. But I don't know, I think that's probably because she never let me... Well, she didn't feed me sugar, really, unless it was, like, my birthday, so maybe that's why I was sick, but, yeah.
You sound like quite a broad and adventurous eater. Is there anything you hate or you won't touch?
Yeah. The only few things I actually cannot deal with is oregano. That's the only herb. I've really got into dill recently, like, obsessed with dill.
But no oregano?
No. I love rosemary. I can't live without rosemary in my fridge. But oregano, I just don't know what it is. I can't bear it. Franco Manca, sometimes they put it on the pizza and I'm just like, I forgot to tell you, I didn't like it. What else? I can't stand parsnips. I don't know what the big deal about the parsnips is. Everybody loves parsnips, but I don't. And I can't deal with Brussels sprouts. Everybody loves them again, but I can't handle them.
What would your family have for Christmas normally?
Definitely turkey, geese and, like, whole bread sauce and, you know, everything, cranberry sauce, roast potatoes, parsnips, which I pass, obviously. Yeah, lovely mince pies. My grandma did us make the best mince pies. I obviously bring the mooch fudge.
Is the mooch fudge, is it shaped in the shape of a mooch? Is that how you...
Yeah, I'm working, like, I did it for the first year last year, but I've been experimenting with my fudge recipe, actually. So I'm hoping I get... I don't know, it's interesting fudge recipe. I need to spend a bit more time on it, I think. But this is a thing, and I have to, like, try it out, test it, eat it, and I don't actually have that much of a sweet tooth, so...
It's hard to make small batches of fudge as well. You're kind of committed to quite a lot of fudge if you're making it.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to eat it, right, to, like, kind of get the recipe right. I think I need a bit of vanilla extract in my next batch.
And... We normally end by asking what your desert island meal would be. What would yours be, Bip?
Oh, that's a tough question. Oh, that's the thing. Like, one week I like pizza, next week I don't. You know, it's quite hard to decide on that one, but it'll probably be my mummy's lasagna. Oh. That's my favourite. Yeah. Ever since I was a kid, every single birthday she makes it for me is so good.
And no blue icing, presumably.
No, none of that.
Bip, thank you so much for joining us on Table Talk. And Bipling's newest album, Mooch and the Moochies by Queen of Mooch, is available now on all major platforms. Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.